Hi, this is Pete Oliver Kruger.
And this is Michael Mad Dog Doggerty.
And you're listening to the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Hursko. Join with me, I have two fellow Agile practitioners. We have Michael Mad Dog Doggerty. Michael, good evening.
Hello, greetings.
And we have Peter Oliver Kruger. Pete, thanks for joining.
Good evening. Thanks for having us.
And I am really, really glad to have you gentlemen on. So the topic of this episode is Michael and Pete have a book coming out, which is called Shift from Product to People. And they've started sharing the early chapters. If you're on our Discord server, you've probably seen the first couple. They actually read. I think they read great. And we reached out to these guys and said, hey, why don't you come on the show and let's talk about it? Because the frame of reference with the Phoenix Project, which we'll get into in a minute, is something that's familiar to probably all of you listeners. It's to most of the people who contribute to the Agile Uprising conversation, Discord discourse. So we wanted to have these gents on to talk about it and see where the impetus comes from, where things are, where it came from, and where they're going. So let's start off with the simple, basic question. Well, you know what? Before we get into the book, I'm going to give you two a chance to introduce yourselves. And Michael, I'm going to start with you. Just a quick bio. I ran into you standing at a bar. You're going to tell me, hi, I'm Michael, and what?
I'm a master of no trades, jack of many. And that means I've been into the very tender age of being young, writing my own adventure program text-based called, like Zork, if any of you remember those days.
Oh, man. You're dating yourself here, my friend.
Yeah, I am dating myself big time. And we had a network of computers, IBM PET computers, that I wrote that text-based adventure game on and fell in love with anything technology from that point on. And so that is it transpired to me getting into first development, then getting into project management, then test lead, then product owner, then scrum master. Then I got a little bit involved in, I guess they call it human centered design or customer experience design. Some of those I do awful, really terribly. And others like business analysts is one I can do pretty well. So I've ended up falling into doing more of the work around coaching these days. And I'll keep away from the big A word that is often used in that way. It's about coaching people to me and working through psychology. It's amazing how much psychology is involved because all the big problems we tend to have come down to people and what people do and don't do. So that's a little bit of my background.
We are the blessing, curse, and root and solution of most problems. Pete, how about you?
I also have a very eclectic background, but psychology has been at the center of it. So going back to college, I was an actor and a director. And so I learned a lot about people and interacting with folks and trying to put things together there. I was a developer and a manager, used a lot of the same skills there and trying to put things together. Then got into starting my own company. So I was an entrepreneur for a while, quickly just determined the difference between having a great idea and selling a great idea. That got me into lean startup and product consulting. And I did that for quite a few years before getting into back into the enterprise and doing a lot more agile coaching. So now I work a lot on the transformations and the business agility buzzword stuff.
Business agility buzzword. That's a good way to put it. It's a good way to put it. Michael, so just to talk about your background, you know, I always find the term human-centric design very interesting, right? Because I don't say that as an insult. I say that as, it's funny that we have to call out the fact that you need to put humans at the center of your design, right? And that also leads down the very interesting philosophical rat hole where with stuff like Logjbin, right? Which is a man-made computer language where the intent is to get computers and humans speaking the exact same language with the exact same syntax, right? So if we stop doing human-centric design and just doing design, but we put computers on equal footing as humans, where does that take us in the future? And at this point, I'd like to shout out my favorite friend, Dave Snowden, who talks about we will eventually have artificial intelligence, but that's not because computers are getting smarter. We are getting dumber and we're going to meet them in the middle. So there's that to be said. Pete, you know, I find it very interesting that you have a background in acting, because I do think that whole acting, directing, theater, improv, that stuff does play a part in, and honestly, a lot of what we do. We recently interviewed Jardina London talking about her structural agility white paper that she did for the Business Agility Institute. And she was talking about a book she was reading about improv by Alan Alda and how it has really helped her. And we also have my favorite, Dan Messick. He was talking about one of the things he's working on is how to act in front of a camera and how to create lasting impressions via a WebEx, right? Rolling back and forth from the camera and whatnot. So I definitely think it's a lot like the obliquity thing, right? Where you're going to come up with better solutions if you're coming in from different sides, right? If all you've ever known is this Phillips head, somebody's going to hand you a flathead. You're going to go, well, what the hell is this? So coming from the other side, well, is this a bagel? Is this a screwdriver? Get a better result. But enough of my digressing. So here we go. So you guys are, like we talked about, you're writing a book. It's in the same vein as the Phoenix Project or the Unicorn Project. So why now? Why now? Why start a book now with everything else that you got going on? Because you're both obviously quite busy.
Yeah. I think it's largely because what we end up dealing with on a daily basis was not being talked about. And it's one of the things that Michael and I got into. We were asking ourselves this exact same question. Is there's a bunch of books out there. And we kept asking ourselves, because we read quite a bit. And we're like, have you seen a book about this? Have you seen a book about this topic? Have you seen a book about that topic? And we just couldn't find one. And so we kind of figured out maybe we should write one. And because it's stuff that we were tackling every day. And we specifically, what we were tackling is folks who are really good at the technical aspects. We could even say that many of them are really good at Agile. They're really good at DevOps. They've gone through, they've done the Phoenix Project. They're doing spectacular at that. And there's still something missing. And we're like, we know what that stuff is that's missing. And it's in that same realm as human-centered design, you know, and that people-centered process. It's all the stuff that, you know, I was doing when I consulting with Lean Startup and design thinking. And I realized that a lot of people had just never been exposed to this way of thinking. Kind of like the you're talking about, like the Agile stuff, or not the Agile, the acting stuff. Mm-hmm. So in college, I was exposed to improv. It was one of the first acting classes I was taken. And all of a sudden, I was like, I had to make up a scene, and I was sure that I wouldn't know how to do it. And it just came out of me. And I just realized that there was this possibility. And my mind was blown and my eyes were open. And it's one of the things that I enjoy about this work and the stuff that we're covering in this book is when I take people through realizing you can do the same work you're doing centered around people, or you can do the work that you're doing centered around process. And the people part is so much more fun. And you're going to love it better, and you're going to have better outcomes, and everything's going to start to fall in line once you make that shift, once you make that perspective change.
Fun, but also I would say difficult, right? That's the harder part, right? Because if you think about it, anybody can create a new process, a new scaling framework, a new way to work, right? But it's getting people to use it, getting the idea to stick, getting that that cultural tipping point where it goes from that 5% embedded to 20% unstoppable idea, you know, absorption. That's the hard part. And when I started poking through the book, right, and I read your couple initial chapters, obviously I've read The Goal, I've read The Phoenix Project, I've read The Unicorn Project. So you have The Goal, which is the Bible, it's theory of constraints. Then it moves into The Phoenix Project, which is theory of constraints applied to manufacturing with a little bit of modernization to The Goal. And then you have The Unicorn Project, which is basically the other side of The Phoenix Project. It's all DevOps, right? And what caught my eye first was the fact that it's told like a narrative, right? Because when you try to give someone, when you say you need to read this book, right? Whenever someone says you should read this book, my eyes instantly glaze over. I'm like, what is this person going to give me, right? Is this like, you know, good night moon or whatever? A narrative story, there are people who can grok that easier, because it's easier to put yourself in Michael's shoes and say, oh, okay, Michael, the character is going through X, Y, and Z. I kind of get that. And I do think you've hit on an interesting spot in the sense of, we have the stuff around DevOps, we have the stuff around Lean, and we have the stuff around theory of constraints, but there's no narrative story talking solely about people, right? I mean, and I read a lot too. I think the closest I have seen come to it is one of Jennifer Garvey's Berger's books, Unlocking Leadership Mind Traps, right? That's told as a narrative as well. But that narrative story resonates. Obviously written like a novel with narratives, like there's characters, which is pretty fun because again, you can project yourself into those characters. There's a term when we were going back and forth about building this agenda, there was a term that came up that I'd never seen before. So I wanted to ask you guys when you were dealing with the publisher, the quote was the third wave of agile adoption, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but can we talk a little bit about that more, where that conceptually is coming from?
Yeah.
Because I honestly think there is something there, but what did they just drop that one out of the blue, or was there like a measured response?
Yeah, so we're working with our publisher, and we actually spent a long time first off trying to figure out the title of the book. We had a lot of working titles like Game of Agile and Agile Expanse, and then we said, why are we even having the word agile in this, right? It's not really just about agile, it's about people. So it finally went to, and by the way, if you count the times we say the word shift probably in this podcast, it will be over a dozen once we get through it, but shift from product to people, that really stuck. And we find that title to really get down to, it's not really about any sort of framework or methodology or style of the day. It's about how to work with people in a way to build products that matter. And shout out to you again, Jay, on bringing up Alan Alda of MASH, because he's one of my favorite career actors, him and Robin Williams as far as comedians. So as far as the third wave, we're working with a publisher internationally. It's COVID times. They're helping out with that. We got in contact with them through actually Jason Little, Offer Lean Change Management, a gentleman of Okiosafi. And basically he's got a little bit of a European accent. He's not, of course, from the United States. And he'll say words like beta instead of beta. He says beta. And it makes it
always funny. Yeah, that's always interesting. Right. Yeah.
And so he brought up, well, this is like the third wave. And it resonated with me and Pete in a lot of ways. And he just ran with it without really talking to us. It's kind of like, okay, we trust you. You trust us, because he's also published books by Jurgen Apollo, who's pretty well known for Management 3.0 and other books. And basically, I've heard that sort of thing done in many other ways. Like the wave one kind of was the age of product. And that's like 1970s NASA. I've even met the first PMI member ever to exist, Eric Jennett. He's unfortunately passed away just in 2019. But in general, that was the way things done. And it's still, PMI still rules the world in a lot of ways. And so wave two, I remember sitting in 2010. So it's been over 10 years now with Dave Hussman, who unfortunately also passed away. I'm not trying to bring up people that passed away or anything like that. But he was saying, look, the age of project is dead. It's now the age of products. And that's where we're going. Products matter. The product is key. And so that kind of equated to a wave two. And what we're seeing now is that wave three is really beginning to merge with Amazon. You know, Jeff Bezos says there's always a chair in the room that we have for the end user, customer obsession. And a lot of other companies have been following that wave as well. So we like to say wave three is all about people. That's our modern wave. Now, it started much longer ago. I mean, that even if you look at the Agile Manifesto, right, individuals' interactions, people have always been front and center. But now we're beginning to really get everything else revolving around more on people and safe. They call it customer centricity. Pick your choosing and which way you want to implement it. But it really does come down to, let's get back to the people and let's get back to the narrative on that third wave of delivery.
Which I think, if you look at, you know, we've done a lot of reference on this podcast to like Carlotta Perez, Technology and Financial Capital, and Kondratiev waves and how things peak and trough. And then we've actually had Ivor Jacobson on to talk about, we talked about the methods prism, but he has that whole theory that, you know, 1960 to 1980 was the era of the microprocessor. 1980 to 2000 was the era of object-oriented programming. 2000 to 2020 was the era of Agile. What's next? Now we're at a tipping point. Right. We are definitely at a tipping point. I think everybody can agree with that. And maybe, you know, maybe the next big thing to come out of MBA school, God bless you guys, if you get there right before the wave crests, right, is the people centric aspect of it. Right. I mean, I've done some lectures at a college near me. And when the students ask me, college students, when they ask me, you know, what courses should I be taking? I don't tell them to take statistics, you know, and I don't tell them to take like, you know, quality management. I tell them take psychology. Take sociology, take philosophy, take logic, take debate, take anything which helps you think, but not only think, helps you understand other people. Because at the end of the day, like we were talking about, you know, the people are the beginning and the end, the alpha and the omega, the problem and the solution to most of our problems. It's always back to people. So if you get good with people, it will make a lot of sense. And you'll be much more successful no matter what widget you're trying to sell, build, deploy, project manage, whatever. And speaking of widgets and speaking of people, right? So as you gentlemen have built this narrative, you do touch on a lot of the things that come across most of us as Agile practitioners' worlds, right? I mean, not to play buzzword bingo, but you touch on stuff like lean startup, right? You touch on things like design thinking, the double diamond. You talk about the MVP, which is, you know, it's one of those words.
One of the most misunderstood concepts out there.
You beat me to it, Pete. You beat me to it. Due to semantic diffusion, MVP is almost like the word agile in the sense of when you say it to 80 people, yes, they will have 80 different opinions. Yes. You talk about customer discovery, right? All those things that the ideation aspects of what we do, which truth be told, that stuff does not come out of a scaling framework. It does not come out of a exam, right? These are things that you need to do your homework, do your digging, find different methods, and then grab the one that works for you.
Yeah, and that's why we ended up having to write it in the format that we did as the novel. Like going back to what you were saying before, is that there's books out there on lean startup. There's books out there on design thinking. There's been, I mean, human-centered design, it goes back like a decade. More than a decade. That I'm just starting to think, just thinking about my own personal sort of experience. But like going back, I realized coming out of college that I was lucky, and I didn't realize this for the longest time. Because I came out of college, I was working on a project that was the very first online university, and we had a full usability lab. And so we brought customers in, we ran things through, we got feedback, we did all this stuff. It was about a decade later before I found somebody else who had that history in their background and who had done that kind of work. And it's a different way of looking at the world. And all of that stuff is out there. Like, because I had that experience, I went and I read a bunch of books. I went and I, you know, followed a bunch of podcasts. I went and I did a bunch of different things. And some people I've talked to have done the same things. They looked at the same stuff and it just completely went over their head. And I realized, like, knowing it, feeling it, absorbing it is different. And so that's why we were like, you know, we can't just put out another manual on this. We can't just put another description on there. That's not anything new. That's the thing that we help people through, is really feeling this, really understanding this, really internalizing it. And the only way to do that is probably going to be through a novel. So we said, let's go ahead and do it as a novel. And we also realized that it takes all different kinds and types. And so that got us to the point where we realized that we couldn't just do a novel from one point of view either. That wasn't going to tell the whole story and people weren't going to understand it. So we got into this thing. So one of the things that sets our book aside from others is that we switch the point of view from chapter to chapter. So each chapter you hear something from a different character's point of view. And so we get to hear about it from the marketing standpoint. We get to hear about it from the product manager. We get to hear about it from the designer, you know, as well as the VP, you know, and just we keep skipping around because you'll never really understand people-centered design if you only look at it from one perspective.
And that was one of the things that really jumped out at me. You know, we talked, you know, I was just talking about philosophy. I've been reading a lot of philosophy lately and how a lot of it comes back to, I'm going to steal a Peter Merrillism here. It comes down to frame. So what is the frame by which you are viewing this current situation? And the best coaches that we all know, the best even just consultants that we know, right, is someone who can remove themselves from a situation, go across the table, put themselves in Michael's shoes, and then really understand where Michael is coming from, because that leads to better conversation, better dialogue, a better solution. And that was one of the things that jumped out at me from the book, is you're telling the same story from different points of view. So you really are spinning, it's almost like a panopticon where the story itself is in the middle and you're doing all the different eyes that can come at it from all the different angles, which helps to flesh out a story without requiring it to be a magnum opus of 1,500 pages.
We're trying to keep it under 1,500 pages.
I will. I. You know. I'm not going to talk about his religious side of his career, but the most painful book that I've ever read in my life, 1,800 pages of my life that I want back, is L. Ron Hubbard's Battlefield Earth.
I've read that too.
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. He spends like the first 900 pages setting up the humans to be slaves. And then there's like another 900 pages of this revolt, but it's 1,800. And I'm one of those people who is anal retentive. I'm sure our listeners of listening to my show are listening to the show are nodding along going, yeah, Jay. Once I start the book, I have to finish it because I want to know how it ends. And I literally finished that book, turned and dashed it in the fireplace.
And the movie was almost as bad with John Travolta in it. Oh my God.
I still have not seen the movie. I refuse to go near it because it's going to bring back like flashbacks. but one of the other things, so we're talking about, you're taking all these concepts that, like you said, Pete, you can find them in a bazillion different books, blog posts, and podcasts, but you're folding all these topics in that are truly, I mean, agile adjacent. They're more strategy. Right. And that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You're taking all these things, you're putting them through the eyes of people who would normally do these type of things in a corporate environment. So you're placing the POV around the actual goal. And along with that, these people who are doing these things, you also have a varying level of corporate structure in here, because you have managers, you have individual contributors, you have a lead developer, you have a C-suite, the CEO shows up early. Which is another thing that not only I think that we lose sometimes, you know, getting our heads down, trying to help someone solve a problem, is not only do you need to come at it from their point of view vis-a-vis their role or their responsibility, but you also need to come at it from where they sit in the corporate hierarchy, because not just role, right? It's also, I may be a team lead, but I also may be a VP of engineering. So that stuff does come into play. It does come into play.
Yeah, so we have right now planned 9 different personalities are going to have that perspective, and then there are going to be satellites around it, like you mentioned, which we also have included a lot of different personalities. Like, for instance, the age of people might be that third wave, but we also incorporate in there Roy, who we keep for the most part in the book. Everyone's just by first name, and we have a very multiple cultural names in there. Like the CEO name is Ahmed. And so it's not just like we have Mary or John or Sue or Pete or Chris or Jay or anything like that. It's very multicultural. And with those perspectives, we've also included the age of the data scientist. And I'm kind of ripping that off from Jeffrey Moore, you know, author of a lot of books like Zone the Wind and Into the Tornado and so on. And I follow his stuff. He's pretty amazing with a lot of materials.
Yeah.
And so we have a guy in there called Roy that is the data scientist. And we're bringing up from Roy's perspective a lot of the friction and actually with product management and with other people in there. And that's something else that's becoming, are we going to turn the age of robots in the future? Everything's written by, you know, the scripts and all of the analytics that have been done. You know, you got your level of deep thinking that's going on behind it. Yeah, there's the business analytics and all behind that part of it that Roy brings up, but then you're bringing up the people perspective, and then you're bringing up the different levels of how they interact with each other. Some people are the shooting stars, like Naomi, who's the product manager, is one of the main characters. She's a shooting star, moving up quickly, wants to excel, wants to succeed, and has a certain type of personality trait that goes into spiral dynamics and all of the Enneagram side of it. Won't go too far into that. You don't have to understand it to see just how those personalities interact and cause friction, as well as those that are more like they're rock stars. They're like Roy, who's a data scientist. He knows what he knows really well. He doesn't want to do anything else. Stop trying to pull him out. He doesn't want to go up on the ladder to become the VP or the CEO of a company. So we've got a lot of perspectives there, and that whole ecosystem gets really difficult in a narrative just to keep everything going, because you got to think about how everybody's going to be interacting. It's not just a how-to book. Mm-hmm. We're not doing one of those Eli Goldratt, the coach comes in and okay, coach is going to tell you step 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We're going to have some real heated interactions. There's some surprises that are going to come up with our book in part 2. Part 1 is what we've released right now that anyone can have available free to listen to, but part 2 gets into more of the, here's what happens with solutions on those and how to start improving. And then part three is the after effect, the results of it. And we got some surprises that are coming up there. Pete and I are still changing this as we go. And we all always love the feedback that we're getting on it. That helps us frame the book and change as we go. We want to have a living book as well.
Right. And again, it goes without saying that we will, for our listeners, there's going to be links to all these guys' stuff in the show notes. You can navigate there within one click and very easily be there, be at in front of the materials themselves. So one of the other things, as we were passing this agenda back and forth and working on, I pointed out how one of our successful episodes was The Dark Side of Coaching. And one of the things that came up in The Dark Side of Coaching that you gentlemen called out as something we might want to discuss is that whole idea of tiers of coaches, right? Like I have a good friend. I don't know if I can use his name, so I'm just going to call him Barry Sanders. I referenced him last show. Barry Sanders talks about their different classes of service. You have team coach, program coach, portfolio coach. He goes, when are we going to get to like conglomerate coach? You know, like it's eventually the absurdity is going to know no bounds.
Grandmaster coach. Yeah.
But that is, you do call out. And when we were going back and forth, you actually made the remark. I forget which one of you made the remark that coaching to that level, you know, we can joke all we want, right? Of the stratigraphy that comes out of the consultant driven model of agile coaching engagement. But there is a different way of working when you start getting above a certain level, right? You need to deal with I'm not going to say someone who's used to having their ass kissed, but when you get to someone who's of that higher level, who has very limited time and is not necessarily, you know, going to sit around and shoot the shit with you, it's a different type of skills. It's different way. It's a different way of thinking.
Yeah. It's a very different skill set. And yeah, I was very struck by that conversation that you all had on The Dark Side of Coaching. And like, I'm listening to this and I'm like almost shouting at, you know, my
iPod podcast. Or whatever. That's I was listening to it. That's how we know it's like, a good show. Oh, if you're yelling at the head.
I want to be on this podcast. I want to jump in and be part of this conversation here. Cause I noticed those same kinds of things. Like everybody sees it, you know, you've got the different, you know, things. And as we were talking on the podcast, you guys were talking about how, it comes down to sort of salary levels. But one of the other things that like I wanted to like, you know, intersperse in there that I couldn't, was that it also comes from different, you know, there are different sets of skills. You know, somebody can be really fantastic at coaching a team, you know, and that goes back to like the original kind of like, you know, Agile that was put out, which didn't actually talk about the product owner. It was like this magical backlog shows up and then do, you know, some agile stuff to it, and it'll help you get that stuff out the door. And they're like, well, wait a minute, where did that backlog come from? And so then we got to talking about working on teams, you know, working together and product working together, the business with operations and even marketing and sales. And now we're talking value streams and we're talking scaled agile and how do all those pieces come together. And so that to me like sparked within my love of spiral dynamics. Spiral dynamics really at its core gets down to this idea of sort of spheres of awareness. And the larger your sphere of awareness comes in, you know, that you have, you start dealing with different aspects of things. Like if all you have to deal with is team productivity, you can get really into details and do a lot of different stuff. And that's usually what a team coach is helping a team do, is to figure out how to do that. Once you have to coach an entire, product release train, or you know, to coach like a whole value stream, whichever terminology you want to use on it, you have to understand how all those different pieces. You have to have done sales, so you know what sales needs. You have to have done marketing. You have to have done, you know, product design and you know, BA kind of work. You have to have done testing and operations and even, you know, VP and understand strategy and how all those pieces come together to be able to coach those things. And then there's another sphere outside of that, which is there's doing that in your organization. And then there's doing that in another organization, your competitors, the things that are not your competitors, the companies that could come in and disrupt you, with a small startup versus, you know, a gigantic, you know, monolith of an organization, and understanding how all of those things fit together and being able to think on that level and that scale is a different set of skills. And so that's how I see those kind of three: team coach, team, obviously. You've got portfolio coach, which is dealing with an entire portfolio, all the different pieces of the value stream. And you've got somebody else that's dealing with the enterprise, who's dealing with, you know, or looking outside the organization, where, how do we fit into the marketplace and the Geoffrey Moore kind of stuff? And it's not that they are like, you can't be a portfolio coach or you can't be an enterprise coach if you're not a good team coach. It's just a completely different skill set. You could do all you do is enterprise and all you do is strategy, or all you do is value stream stuff, and you may suck as a team coach. But you know, you have to have that skill in order to be able to take that job.
And I think, if I remember the episode correctly, I think a lot of the umbrage that that most of us on that episode, or most of the guests on that episode, talked about is the fact that, like you said, it's used to drive salary. It's used to create an artificial tier to drive salary. Not that that doesn't mean that Michael, who right now is a team coach, maybe Michael does have the right skill set that I drop him in front of the CIO and he convinces the guy in 10 minutes that we're doing everything wrong and theory constraints is the way to go. You know, we don't know that. Yeah. But when you use it as an artificial delimiter to kind of bounding box people into a place, that's where the bad effects of that come on. I liked how you talk about sphere of influence. I'm currently working my way through Steve Tendon's Tame Flow. Steve, if you're listening, I'm going to be reaching out soon because I want to have you on the show. But he talks about the whole span of control versus sphere of influence. So at different levels, you have different areas, which are your span of control, which are things that you can actually physically change or make to your point, a team coach can change a team, or a program coach can work with a program. But then there is that greater sphere of influence, right? Which is, you can't necessarily control it, but you can help to try and influence it. And influencing is a lot more soft hand, soft shoe, leather glove type approach, as opposed to the battering ram that, truth be told, I'm a much bigger fan of. You know, like when I was working, tangentially from a call center, and they were having problems with the agents using this new workflow they built. And they were bouncing around ideas about how do we drive adoption. I said, actually, I think we're overthinking this. It's really simple. On every agent's desk, you put a piece of paper and a copy paper box. And the piece of paper says, here is the new policy. If you don't want to follow the policy, you can put your stuff in this box and wait for us to collect you. And they're like, Jay, that's really not going to win any, you know. And I think of my mom in the back of my head going, you know, you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. But at the same time, I'm like, sometimes you got to swing the pendulum the other way. But to your point, Pete, it is true. It is a different set of skills. And it's not a set of skills that, again, you read a book and you just get. It does take a little bit of development. Which is why, as we talk about the future of the big A word, right? We've hit the 20-year mark, things are going to change. I really think we're going to see a lot more emphasis into the people side of coaching stuff, the stuff like ORSC, the stuff like some of that other coaching, some of the other coaching practices where it's really more around coaching people than coaching agile, which is most times and most of us know when we're hired to coach agile, we're more than likely coaching people. I think our industry gets done a disservice when someone gets hired thinking I'm an agile coach, I'm just going to coach agile. And then the people monster comes around the corner. It's like, well, this person's so emotional. How do I deal with them? It's like, well, that's part of it.
Hey, what do you mean, Jay? You mean I can't just get a certified Scrum Master and just change the world? I can't do that? What?
You could. Depends where you, I mean, is there anybody that-
How big's
that
your world?
Yeah, is there anybody who hasn't heard of Scrum and you wouldn't walk in with your CSM and they say, that's not how you do it. So let's talk a little bit more about the book. So you guys are writing chapter by chapter, you're throwing it out there, everybody's available to read it. When do you think you're gonna hit the publishing? Like when can we expect it out for the masses?
That's a really good question. And we do have a target right now, but it's one of those targets where we'll probably shift it a little bit. There goes the word shift again one more time. In that, I would say it's going to be summer of this year.
Okay.
Basically, our goal is that we release the first four chapters. Our biggest, that's for part one. And the part one is like all the problems and all the disruption, everything else goes in this fictitious financial institution and what they do about it, right? Just that it upheaves their boat where they had everything going really wonderful. Now you've read about that. And for the audience online, that's kind of the background of it. If you're in a financial company, you'll probably get it really close. And that's where I start a lot of my career, is within financial institutions. So the book itself, we've written that, and we've actually gotten through most of part two, but that's our biggest one. And we're going to do a lot of rewriting with it. That's where we're finding out this narrative. We get feedback, rewrite. We get more feedback, rewrite. And so our goal is to have basically a chapter done. And we're calling chapter sprints, by the way, a chapter done every month. So we expect to have that done by, you know, May, June timeframe. And then the last part's going to be the smallest part. So we expect that to go pretty quick. So I'm already seeing myself go to August here. And it, so if it happens in fall of this year, and we're hitting, actually, if we're hitting, you know, Christmas time of 2021, we'll definitely have it done by then. That is definitely our goal. That's our stretch goal, if you will, okay? Or should I call it uncommitted goal?
Uncommitted yes. Objectives. Jesus, man. it's too late in the show for us to start that rant. Out of morbid curiosity, are you guys going to do a physical print, or are you going to start with the ebook and then go from there?
There will be a physical print. I think it's going to start off with the ebook. You know, okay. We want to like give people who join us in the beginning and give feedback to us, you know, early access. So you actually start getting access to the book as we start going through and rolling out different chapters of it. That gives us feedback, make it even better. And it's kind of like the way that Ash Moria wrote Running Lean. And so he did all stuff that on a podcast, you know, or not podcast, but like a blog for a while, and got a lot of feedback from the community, and it was fantastic. Like he that really helped him out. And putting that together. So
I definitely think there's something to be said about taking that iterative approach. I remember we had Jeff Anderson on talking about his agile organization design. He was doing it the same way. And anything, I mean, a lot of the stuff that Manning Press does now, they do, I think it's called Meep, where you can get in early and they give you early access to see it as it's being written. Lean Pub does it too. There's definitely something to be said about taking these smaller chunks of work with iterations that you can iterate on and evolve. As opposed to spending all this time churning out a giant 400-page manual that the publisher could just send it back and be like, I don't like it. Well,
right.
Little late in the game for you to tell me that, buddy, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll do chapter by chapter, and then we'll, at the end of that, then we'll drop the printed version of it. And then that'll go off, you know, to Amazon or whatever. But Michael and I tend to not do paper as much. So I do almost all my stuff on Audible. I sort of discovered late in life that I'm probably a little bit dyslexic, which is why I've always done things more by audio. It's just much easier and faster for me to do. So having even a Kindle read to me by the computer, so again, that AI coming into things, mm-hmm. you know, sort of the way to go. And so yeah, I do want to get to an audiobook on this, but, you know, first things first. First, right. Get the content done. Then it'd be super easy to put it out into print and publishing. And then we'll go back and do the audio, kind of like Lisa Atkins is doing, you know. I guess like 10 years later, she's finally getting an audio recording.
And I mean, her voice is great with that slight Southern drawl, right? Like I could listen to her read me instructions on how to, and we've had her on the show a bunch of times. Lisa's great. I could listen to her read me instructions on how to like program my computer, right? Like how to write C# code. And I'm pretty sure I'd be okay with it. Cause it wouldn't be like, you know, Gilbert, it's not like it's Gilbert Gottfried reading you the book, you know, which again, now that I think about it, he would actually probably be pretty wild to have him read a book, but whatever.
Yeah.
Sam Kinison, if I want to date myself even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. My, yeah. Him screaming over the background. So guys, I know we're quickly approaching time. So I want to give you a chance to any other shout outs, anything else that, aside from people watching the space or the book, which again, we're going to have in the show notes. If people want to get in touch with you, they want to ask some questions. They want to get more engaged with you two and your project that you're working on. Where do they find you? Where do they go?
You can find me in LinkedIn probably fastest because I'm the only person that's Oliver Kruger there. So it's really fast. You don't even have to get my last name spelled correctly. But just like start with an Oliver-K and like I'm usually the first person that pops up there. So that's probably one of the fastest ways and easiest ways to get in touch with me. I'm also working on a site that's the libraryofagile.org. And so just go to libraryofagile.org and you can get me through there too.
Perfect. How about you, Michael?
Similar way. Of course, my name's pronounced a little harder and not. There's more Dougherty's out there. I even went to high school with another person with exactly the same name as me. And so we got our mail mixed up and other things. But if you just looked up on LinkedIn, Agile Michael Dougherty, that's my name. It's like LinkedIn, you know, IN Agile Michael Dougherty. And I also have my own small LLC that called Lean Agile Enterprises. That's all one word, no dashes, no nothing like that, .com. And if you go there, you can find all about that company. We still haven't made a penny, but I have this feeling that 2022 is going to be a good year for us.
thinking way ahead of the game, Awesome. Well, on behalf of myself and the listeners, Michael and Peter, I want to thank you very much for coming on to the show. On behalf of Michael, Pete, and myself, I want to thank all of you listeners once again for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please give us a review, a rating, leave comments, iTunes, Spotify, Audible, your podcast hosting platform of choice. This really does help other listeners find us. If you like the discussion, if you like what you heard, and you want to get into more of the dialogue, again, both Michael and Pete are on our Discord server. You are more than welcome to come in, sign up, and get in on the conversation. We had some weird sort of conversation today before I think Civil War 2.0 started. We were talking about the movie Tenet. And then somehow it led into assessing leadership, readiness for change, which is a really kind of fascinating topic. We went down that rabbit hole. So again, find us on the Coalition, on the Discord server. And as always, we are free, but we do have a Patreon. So if you like what you hear and you want to offset some hosting costs or whatever, feel free to chip in. You will more than likely get a surprise from me in the mail. And last but not least, I do want to give a shout out to Chris Bollinger over at Machine Man Records and his artist Krebs, who graciously provided us with our outro music. We were using royalty free stuff back in the day until I heard it on a Nissan commercial and I freaked out and said, we got to do something different. So shout out to Chris for hooking us up with a unique artist to share his music with the world. So once again, on behalf of myself, I want to thank you, Michael and Pete. And on behalf of Michael, Pete, and myself, I want to thank you all. Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast signing out.